This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. It's our health and living segment, and we've got this doctor on the show. It's been 5 years since he's come on, and we're going to revisit what he spoke about 5 years ago. It was, 30th of October, September. Welcome once again, Dr. Lim Wai Kiat, consultant, ear, nose and throat specialist. How are you today?
I'm very well, Mira. Thank you very much.
You know, if you are actually bothered about your sinus problems or your if you are not afflicted with it yourself or you know somebody who does, which most of us do, rhinosinusitis is something that's absolutely bothersome. I mean, it can also result in severe complications if you don't attend to it. So, Dr. Lim, you're back 5 years on. What's been happening in the field as far as rhinosinusitis is concerned?
Not much, really. I'm a clinician. I'm an ear, nose and throat doctor. I deal with patients from day to day. Nothing much has changed on the ground. I still see patients. Patients still come to me presenting with symptoms, although more and more patients are now coming with their own diagnosis after reading Dr. Google on the internet. But it's still the old-fashioned symptoms, and I examine them, and then I come up with a diagnosis, and then I prescribe the appropriate treatment. That's the reality for me. But I know if you were someone who looked at the latest research, either on the internet or you subscribe to certain websites. Yes, a lot going on at the moment. A lot to do with the genetics of it. People are now going to inflammatory factors. Not so much in terms of new drugs. Nothing much has changed. Antibiotics are still the same. Although I think antibiotic resistance is a concern. So people are now playing around with different combinations, restricting the use of antibiotics. So that's a little bit new. But that's in common, not just for sinusitis, it's infections in any part of the body. People are looking at new surgical techniques, but it's basically there's different ways to skin a cat. We will talk about conventional sinus surgery. We can talk about balloon sinuploplasty, laser, and so on. But they're all the same. So in terms of research, I'm not really that au fait with it. I don't keep in touch. Occasionally when I go to conferences, hear something new, but it's very unusual. So in short, nothing much really has changed in 5 years.
Okay. Yeah. Rhinosinusitis. What do you mean when you say rhinosinusitis?
Okay.
We all say sinus.
I mean, that's a layman's term to mean any combination of symptoms. And I think that's what's more important is what the patient understands of the term sinus or rhinosinusitis. Now, the symptoms which I recognize are things like blocked nose, runny nose. Runny nose can mean greenish or yellowish discharge or clear mucus or blood stained. Although blood-stained mucus, some people will call it epistaxis, which is a specific term to mean blood from the nose. Other symptoms could be post-nasal drip, where you feel there's a lot of mucus or stuff dripping to the back, it causes you to clear your throat. Mm-hmm. Okay, now throat clearing is different from cough, although in Malaysia, people often refer to it as a coughing. Cough. Mm-hmm. Although it's actually, I'm actually throat clearing, but in Malaysian English, cough is often used to mean that. Other symptoms of sinusitis would be pain, headache. Across the forehead, people would call it headache. But it's in your face, people call it facial pain. And occasionally people have a toothache. It's actually pain originating from the sinus, but it's referred to a tooth. So we call it a referred toothache. Okay, and other things like sneezing, itchiness, those are also symptoms of the nose. So any combination of that is the layman refers to as sinus. Okay.
Often what you described, we get when we have the common cough and cold.
Yes.
And so how do you make a differentiation between it's sinusitis as opposed to just symptoms of the flu?
Okay. The word flu, once again, I'm big
influenza.
On... Yeah, I'm big on terms that have different meanings to different people. As a ENT surgeon, to me, flu means influenza, mm-hmm. like what you said. But to the layman, flu means, to the average Malaysian, it means runny nose, cough and cold. Could also mean, headache and things like that. So I'm very specific. I spend a lot of time asking patients specifically what do they mean by, when they use terms like dizzy or flu or sinus. Because I don't, I can't assume what the patient understands is what I mean. You see, okay. Let's go back a few steps. What's rhinosinusitis? As a ENT specialist, I understand it as inflammation of the mucosa of the nose and the paranasal sinuses. Now, that's a long definition. Basically, what it means is it's swelling of the membranes covering the sinuses and the nose. The sinuses are those hollow spaces within your facial bones. There's two in, across your forehead, okay, they're called the frontal sinuses. Two in your cheekbones, the maxillary sinuses. Between your eyes, you have the ethmoid air cells. And behind your eyeballs are the sphenoid cavities. So you have four kinds of sinuses, basically. Children at a young age, when they're first born, only have the maxillary sinuses. It's only when closer by age 10 that you get the full four sets of the four kinds of sinuses. So it's basically inflammation of the sinuses, or the membranes covering it, okay? And also that of the nose. But if you refer to inflammation of the nose itself, it's called rhinitis. But if you refer to inflammation of the sinuses, it's called sinusitis. But the nose and the sinuses are basically structurally, anatomically, physiologically the same. So the proper term is actually rhinosinusitis, but it's a bit of a mouthful. So when doctors say sinusitis, we usually refer to infection of the sinuses and the nose. But when we say rhinitis, it usually refers to allergy. Okay, so those are the two broad categories of what causes sinus symptoms or sinusitis. One is infection, which could be viral, which is the common influenza, mm-hmm. the common cold. It could be bacterial. It could sometimes uncommonly be things like TB or even fungal, okay, but that's the broad category, infection. And the other one is actually allergy, okay? Allergy in Malaysia would be commonly due to dust mite, okay? Although fungus or mold can cause it as well as fur from your pet or, you know, from cats and dogs, whatever.
What about the recent haze?
Okay, that one is not so much allergy, it's more exacerbating factors, okay? Under allergy, we talk about outdoor and indoor allergens, okay? Indoor, it refers to mold and dust mites and so on. Outdoor refers to things like pollens, which we don't have, or at least we don't talk about airborne pollens causing allergies in Malaysia, but, you know, in countries where there's spring, certainly do. Things like the haze, air pollution, car exhaust fumes, those are more exacerbating factors. They cause an irritation. They make your symptoms worse. They don't actually, in a strict sense, constitute an allergy, but they cause some kind of inflammation, thereby making your allergic symptoms worse. It's not allergy, but it's similar to allergy, I guess, in a way you can describe it as that, yeah.
Any particular demographic that is more prone to or predisposed to rhinosinusitis? Let's break
first.
It down. So okay, rhinitis allergy. And infection. Yeah. Let's go okay. According to that.
In allergy, something like in any country, something like 30 to 40% of people are prone to being allergic. Okay. Well, that's what I've been taught. That's what they talk about in conferences. But my personal belief, right, and this is not substantiated by any scientific research, but I believe that everyone is allergic. Everyone is prone to it. It's just the degree of it, okay? Because there is a definition for allergy in scientific circles. It has to be a certain number of days in a week and then a certain number of hours. And then you need to do some tests, okay, some blood tests or skin prick testing to prove that you're allergic. So people came up with the figure of about one-third, okay? But my personal belief is that everyone is allergic to some degree. Why I say that is because I don't consider myself to be allergic, but then I do remember, if my memory serves me correctly, that when I was younger, I used to have a blocked nose while I was in bed. But while I was outside of my bedroom, I was fine. But I don't have any other allergic problems. So I think I do have an allergic tendency, but it's just that it doesn't manifest itself. Mm-hmm. You know. So I think everyone is allergic to some degree. But yeah, it's said to be one-third. Now, allergy manifests itself, the nose allergy, it's said to be 4 years old, but my personal belief that it can probably start a bit earlier. Maybe not in infancy, but probably around about 2 years and above, Okay. It is in contrast to allergy of the lungs, which is asthma, which can start in infancy, and allergy of the eyes and skin, which is, you know, eczema and allergic conjunctivitis, which can start at much earlier ages. But allergy starts in your childhood, basically. Okay, so it's usually more active before your mid-teens. But after your teens, allergy, whether it's a skin, your nose, or asthma, tends to calm down a little bit more. So people think that they grow out of allergy, but they don't actually grow out. But it's more common at a younger age.
Why is that? Is it the stronger immune system?
No, it's not to do with that. I think it's just got to do with the maturity of the immune system. I mean, everything has maturity at an immature phase before it matures. Mm-hmm. So same thing with the immune system. It takes about a dozen years, 12 years and above, before you actually become immune, fully mature.
What about hormones? Do they play a role by triggering off a certain allergy and results in rhinitis? Because I've noticed like some people would develop rhinitis during pregnancy, for an example.
Oh, that's pregnancy rhinitis.
Yeah. And then it goes off.
Yep.
Some developed post-pregnancy. What's going on?
Great question. Okay, but my personal observation, I really don't know the answer to that, but you're right. Hormones do have a role in making symptoms worse. I'm not sure if it's actually synergistic with allergy, or synergistic meaning that it actually makes allergy any worse, but it certainly can make symptoms of blocked nose and runny nose and headache and all worse. Hormones do that. It's well recognized that in pregnancy, because of the hormones, progesterones and estrogens, it makes the blood vessels a bit more dilated, so there's more blood flowing through your nose as well as through other parts of your body. So when there's more blood flowing through your nose gets more blocked. And women who have never had blocked nose or allergic symptoms in your life often suffer from blocked nose during pregnancy. And symptoms disappear when the bub's been delivered. Okay, so we know that hormones can make symptoms of allergy worse. So it got me thinking, perhaps withdrawal of hormones in menopause.
Menopause.
Okay. I mean, I've noticed that some women come to see me with blocked nose in their 50s. And yeah, I guess withdrawal of hormones may have a role in that. But I haven't read anything about that. But I'm sure hormones do play a role. You know, it's at different stages of your life. I mean, I guess the same thing goes for teenagers in puberty. You know, it probably does play a role. I mean, although generally speaking, symptoms do get better in your late teens. But I've also seen some people where symptoms got worse in their puberty ages as well. So I think there's a whole new area for research, but I my personal belief is that hormones do play a role in making symptoms worse.
What about genes?
Certainly, yeah. Allergy is well recognized to be something which is familial. So, yeah, tends to be that if mum and dad had it, your brothers and sisters had it, then you're also prone to getting nose allergy. But I've also seen many cases where parents deny that they have any problems, and kids have it. But I guess it's everything's multifactorial. You just can't say it's the genes.
Yeah.
It's the environment we live in.
But if you say every one of us does in fact have that, or predisposed to an allergy, then
everyone has a predisposition, but I guess the severity of symptoms can differ. You know, so I guess those who qualify as allergic, that one third, the magical one third, I guess the symptoms are more severe.
Compared to the rest.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. We're discussing rhinosinusitis. If you suffer from it, I think a lot of us do. Give us a call. The phone lines are open. It's 0377-109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. When we come back, does saline water, salt water actually help soothe rhinitis? We'll come back and find out on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasothi. Dr. Lim Wai Kiat, consultant, ear, nose and throat specialist in the studio. We're revisiting rhinosinusitis. Well, a lot of us refer to it as sinus. As Dr. Lim has broken down before, it can be divided into two. One is you have rhinitis, which has roots in allergies, and the other one is an infection, which
Actually, the term rhinosinusitis refers to all, in a very broad sense, of everything. But to the layman, he doesn't know I mean, whether he's got allergy or whether he's got an infection, because all he knows is that he's got a blocked and runny nose. He wants it fixed. But for the responsibility of the doctor is to find out whether it's allergy or infection.
You mentioned there are four types of sinuses in the facial area. Mm. And, I was reading that it actually helps prevent or cushion the brain during trauma, actually. Is that one of the roles of the sinuses?
Well, that's a good one. I've never heard of that.
Hollow air pockets in the bones of the face and head that probably exist to cushion the brain during trauma. Really?
I never heard of that. I mean, I've never heard of that, but I mean, no one really knows why the sinuses are there, okay? Someone once joked, they're there to make ENT surgeons rich. Well, let's talk about it another day. But no, some people speculated sinuses are there to improve the sound quality of your voice, okay? Because I'm not pinching my nose, and that's hypo-nasal.
Yeah.
Okay? So it doesn't sound so good, okay? But so I don't know. No one really knows why. But what we know happens to the sinuses is air enters it, and mucus is produced, and that comes out. That's all we know about it.
But
there's the actual purpose.
There's a function for this thin layer of tissue which has mucus on it. I mean, it is always wet.
Yes.
Most of the time.
Yes. I mean, there's a mucus that's actually produced by the mucus cells in the membranes within your sinuses. On a good day, if everything's running well, then normal amounts of mucus will be produced, and that's carried out by the cilia system. It's like a conveyor belt that brings out the mucus. What's the purpose of this? Well, no one really knows, but it's there.
And flush out juices.
Well, I think if viruses and bacteria enter, it gets stuck to the mucus layer, and that gets carried out. So if your sinuses are working well, then everything, all the germs, whether it's bacteria or viruses, gets caught in the mucus layer and gets carried out, okay? And air is continually being replenished. Air is actually absorbed by the cells within the sinuses. So it actually has to be replenished all the time. So normal physiology, normal function of the sinuses, air goes in, mucus gets carried out, okay?
Okay. We have Yo on the line. Yo, you have a question.
Yes. I suffer sinus or some form of it since young, and I still have it until today. To start it off, I'm from Taiping, so it's very humid there, and I get it every morning, and I have this runny nose, and I'll sneeze the whole day through, and my mucus is actually clear.
Okay.
So at some point, I did go and see an ENT specialist, and they had a probe put into my nasal path, and he saw that the sinus was actually swollen.
Mm-hmm.
So the solution was either I got an operation or I don't stay in humid countries, because I did share with the doctor that when I was studying in Canada, I never had to take my medication, and I was okay. So only when I'm back in Malaysia, I have this sinus problem.
And your question is?
Is there any other way other than an operation to actually clear off this problem I have?
Okay. Thank you very much, Yo. We'll answer that on air. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mr. Yo. I think you brought up a few issues which I
humidity.
Close to my heart. Mm. Okay. Listening to his symptoms, it's very clearly allergy. Okay, allergic rhinitis. If he has it every morning, it can't be infection, because infection clears up. If it's a common viral cold, it should clear up within a week. And I don't think it's bacterial, because he's like describing
yellow
green,
mucus.
Thick phlegm and mucus. Is mm-hmm. So he's saying it's clear. He gets it every morning. And the reason why he's getting it every morning is because he's been sleeping with a billion tropical dust mites in his bed. Okay? And if he's saying that Taiping is very humid, he should have more dust mites then, because tropical dust mites love humidity. Okay. But then the other thing he mentioned was that he saw an ENT surgeon who told him he needed surgery. Depends on what his symptoms are. Okay. See, different people have different symptoms from nose allergy. I think we're probably going to concentrate on allergy more than on infection this afternoon. Allergy can manifest itself in some people as mainly blocked nose, okay, and in others, mainly as runny and sneezy, okay. For those who have blocked nose, then surgery is an option, okay. For me, I usually ask the patient if you can tolerate your symptoms, okay, then you don't need anything. If you've got used to it, and many people have got used to it. I've seen teenage boys brought in by their mothers who are concerned that you know their nose is runny all the time, they're slobbering, they're always breathing through their mouths. Mum's more concerned, but when I asked the young man, is he bothered? He said, nah, I'm not bothered. I've been living with it for the last 12 years. So it really depends on very much on the person who's experiencing symptoms. You can't bring a horse to water and force it to drink. So, you know, mum would like his son to be better, but mum can't be with him all the time. So really, because basically if you want your allergy to be better, you've got to be using medications every day or the week, every day, every week, every month. Okay, forever, basically. Mm. And some people are just too busy or just too forgetful to be using medication. So basically, I ask patients, if you are motivated enough, if you don't like your symptoms, then have it treated, okay? Now, if it's mainly blocked nose, the first thing I would offer them would be tablets and sprays, okay? And in 95% of cases, sprays, steroid sprays and antihistamine tablets will fix them. You don't need anything else done. But at 5%, may need surgery, okay? What kind of surgery? Well, it's basically surgery to trim your swollen turbinates. Turbinates are those sausages in your nose which can swell up in allergy, okay? So if it's permanently swollen up and it's not responding to medications or the symptoms are not getting better to at a rate that's satisfactory to the patient, then yes, surgery is fully justified, okay? But I think Mr. Yeo said that the surgeon advised him to have surgery. But let me emphasize that surgery does not cure allergy, okay? Because it's all, as we referred to earlier, it's a lot to do with your genetics and the environment that we live in, okay? Surgery is not going to fix the haze that comes annually from Sumatra. Surgery is not going to fix the genetics that you're born with, okay? But surgery certainly can help with your blocked nose. Surgery will not help you if your main symptoms are sneezing and runny nose and itch. Okay, so it really depends on the symptoms. If you have mainly runny nose, I don't think surgery is going to help you. But if you have a large degree of blocked nose, yes, you can try surgery. But I would advise people to try medications first before embarking on surgery, because surgery does come with its risks.
It does.
Yes.
And when you talk about relief of symptoms with sprays and medication, mm-hmm. There's a certain period of time that you actually have to take this medication and sprays.
Yes.
Because a week doesn't really help. Would you want to just elaborate?
Okay, my favorite is actually a steroid spray. Okay, and they're different brands, but, you know, steroid sprays help to control allergy, because allergy is by definition an overactivity of your immune system. Okay, steroids in general suppress activity of your immune system. So if you spray into your nose, you suppress local immune activity in your nose. So you still have a fairly decent immune system that can fight infection, but it's not overly active, so that you don't get symptoms of allergy. Some people are a little bit anxious about allergy, about steroids, but I usually tell them that only orally consumed steroids in high dosage and long term can cause you to be fat and can stunt the growth of a child. But steroid sprays do not do that. So there's no fear of obesity or stunting growth with steroid sprays.
So the quantity of steroids is actually getting into the system?
The amount that gets absorbed is negligible. Okay. But it's good enough to control your symptoms.
But it's great because it goes directly to
the area that's affected. Yeah. And okay, one thing about steroid sprays is that it takes at least about a week for the effects to kick in. Although you do get an effect straight away, but you know, for it to be clinically obvious, clinically evident, it would take at least about 5 days to a week. Antihistamines take about an hour to work, mm-hmm. but it's a lot quicker than with steroid sprays. But my favorite are steroid sprays.
Okay. Yeah. Can anyone take a steroid spray? There's a question via text message.
Anyone can, sure. I have used this in, generally speaking, okay, if you look at the brochure that comes with the bottle, different makers would say different ages you can start off with. There are some which will say H6, some which say H4, H2. But basically, all steroid sprays can be used at any age. I have used it even in babies. Some babies have blocked nose all the time, and if they don't get better with saline drops or sprays, I do use steroid sprays, even in infants and babies less than a year old. But of course, I mean, I don't do it all the time because, you know, parents are very anxious about their little bubs. So only when there's nothing else works, then do I use steroid sprays in babies. But basically, the short answer is steroid sprays can be used in any age. And they can be used forever and ever.
But should you get properly diagnosed first before you actually consider steroid sprays?
Of course, you should see not necessarily an ENT surgeon, but at least a GP doctor before you start on steroid sprays, yeah.
Before you move on to steroid sprays, mm-hmm. I mean, what do you start with?
What do I start with? Mm-hmm.
Like, say for an example, you're not sure whether it's an allergy. Let's just say it's an infection.
Okay. Well, I think there comes the question is, how do I differentiate between
allergy and infection?
Okay. Mm-hmm. A viral cold, you normally would have a little bit of a fever, body ache, a bit of sore throat. So, and it's usually less than a week. Okay. I mean, Mr. Yeo just now who rang in said that he's been getting it every morning for all his life. Mm-hmm. And that can't be a viral infection. It has to be allergy. Okay. Bacterial infection and bacterial sinusitis, you would have to have pain, a little bit, perhaps a little bit of fever, and your phlegm would have to, or the mucus would have to be yellowish green and thick. So if you have that, if you have bacterial infection from the green phlegm, I certainly won't be giving steroid sprays. I will be giving antibiotics.
Okay. Yeah. So you need to make that differentiation.
Sure, that's right.
Just going back to Mr. Yu, I mean, is there any other way he can manage this well? I mean, we talk about salt water sprays. You have the neti pot where you put salt in the neti pot, and I still don't know how people actually work the flow of the water in the nose using a neti pot.
Well, I mean,
it's probably got to be a skill.
It's got to do with Ayurvedic and yoga
like
that. I mean, yoga, you adopt different positions, standing on your head and things like that. I guess the neti pot user doesn't have to go to the extent of standing on his head, but they do have to tilt their head to one side or the other so that the saline flushes through all the sinuses and eventually coming out on the other side. I can't understand how people can use a neti pot. I mean, it's like, as a kid, I used to dive into water and I had water enter my nose.
Yes.
And it gave you such a bad headache.
Yeah, as I said, it's a skill.
You're
sending in this salt water through one nostril and it comes out through the other nostril.
That's right.
Not sure how they
I don't know how to do it,
it,
but I mean, those people, some patients of mine who've been using it a long time swear by it. And they say that they start every morning, but do I do that? And some of them are doing it a few times a day. Mm-hmm. And it can be used for all sinus symptoms, whether it's allergy or whether it's infection. But usually patients of mine who do use it for allergy. How does it work? Well, it basically, from my understanding, is that you breathe in dust mite particles. Okay, dust particles, after all, are the commonest cause of allergy in this country. So you breathe in dust mite particles, and it settles in your nose. And that's what triggers the reaction, because it's actually inside. It's actually stuck to the membrane of your nose. Mm-hmm. So if you use something to flush it away, then when it's flushed away, there's no more dust mite particle in your nose. So you don't have an allergic response. So that's how I understand how saline flushes work. So, but other people say that it works because it's actually thinning the mucus, okay, make it less viscous, so that it actually runs away faster, so there's less postnasal drip. Okay, I mean, we're talking about saline. It doesn't just have to be used for allergy. It can be used for even in cases of acute bacterial infection, when your mucus and your phlegm is very thick and green. You spray it in to make it a lot more runny, so that it flows away a lot easier. Okay, it can also be used for a common cold. Lots of parents use it in young children with a flu virus, and just using that actually helps improve symptoms a lot.
Salt water spray, exactly. Well. Yeah, works really well.
Mm.
In terms of cost, is it getting costly to manage rhinitis?
I think it is. I mean, we were just discussing about prices of medicines going up because of, well, I mean, there's natural rate of inflation, but I think recently with GST, lots of cross medicine has gone up. Weak ringgit, I think even a TPPA has a role in pushing up the cost of medicines. It's not just the cost of medicines. It's the cost of everything. If you want to think of doing surgery, think twice, because the cost of surgery has gone up. I mean, if you think you bought a medical card 10 years ago, they insured you for $500,000. Well, 10 years ago, $500,000 was a big amount of money. But, you know, with inflation, $500,000 may only last you 3 operations, because sometimes operations can cost up to, even sinus operations, just for one night stay, two night stay, can cost up to $40,000. Okay? So my parting words would be, if you someone offers to do surgery for you, think twice before doing it, not just because of the risk of dying or risk of other complications, but the cost of it. Okay? Your insurance can only take you so far, and don't think that just because you're young, you'll be healthy forever. You know, mm-hmm. When you grow older, you will need your medical card, you will need your insurance more. So conserve it, you know. Don't jump into surgery so often.
But can you do anything to prevent rhinitis at all?
Well, Mr. Yeo just now said that when he moved to Canada, he didn't have any symptoms. That's great. Because
let's all go
it's
to
a
Canada.
It's a dry climate. See, so because when he grew up in Malaysia, so he had allergy to tropical dust mite. So when he moved to Canada to study, he no longer was in contact with tropical dust mite, you see. That's why he didn't have any symptoms.
Okay. Another question here. Any opinion on oil pulling?
Sorry?
Oil pulling. You know,
oil
the
pulling?
People who sort of gargle with oil every morning, whether it's
I'm sorry, I can't comment on that because I never heard of that.
Never heard of it. All
yeah,
right.
I've heard of people gargling with salt water, but not oil.
Yeah. Well, that's the latest. Apparently helps, yeah.
Oh.
What is your advice on using essential oil to treat sinuses?
No comment on that. I mean, okay, I mean, there's a lot of stuff now that people are selling, things that help. I mean, there's some drug reps have come to see me about spraying something that coats the membranes of your nose so that dust mite particles can't stick to it. I don't know how useful that is, but it's not something that we talk about in ENT circles. It's just something which I guess may have come about from alternative medicine and then maybe trying to enter the mainstream. But a lot of these things are unproven. So if it's unproven, I tend not to use it. Essential oils, is that something that you spray in your nose or something that you consume?
No. It's just something you just inhale.
Inhale. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a bit like inhaling
eucalyptus.
Menthol and eucalyptus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it actually does anything good, but the smell of it would be nice.
Yeah. Of course it does. Mm. Different types of surgery, though, for rhinitis.
If I referred just now to blocked nose from allergy. If it really bothers you and it's not getting better with medication, then you can do a turbinectomy or a septoplasty. Septoplasty basically refers to straightening of the septum. The septum is a flat piece of bone in your nose that divides the right side from the left side of your nose. So if the bone is a little bit deviated or bent and it's blocking one side, then yes, you can do septoplasty to remove the bone or the cartilage that's bent.
But most of us have a deviated septum.
Yes, exactly. So that's why we don't need to do surgery. It's only if your nose, if the patient feels his nose is blocked, not because someone tells him that you need to have it done. It really depends on your symptoms. The most important person here is not the doctor. The most important person here is the patient. If the patient feels that he's got a blocked nose, yes, then you should do a turbinectomy and septoplasty. I mean, you know, if I were to stick a telescope into 100 people, 50 of them will have a deviated septum, but not all of them will complain of a blocked nose, you see. So that's for blocked nose. That's for allergic rhinitis. Or turbinectomy refers to trimming, reducing the size of your turbinates, reducing the size of the sausages within your nose. So they don't regrow. Once you cut it, it doesn't regrow. So that you'll have a clear passage to breathe.
Well, what are the consequences of that? There's obviously a need for those sausages.
Oh, yes.
It's the first time I've heard of sausages in my nose.
Oh, okay. All right. If you look at a diagram, they do look like sausages.
Okay. Yeah.
There's three of them, the superior, middle, and inferior turbinates. Yes, there is a purpose for them. It's to moisten the air that you breathe in. Okay. There are some cases where you cut away too much of the turbinates, so that the nose actually becomes very, very dry. There's a lot of crusting. That's known as atrophic rhinitis, where you've taken away too much of the turbinates. So the nose is unable to moisten the air, so there's a lot of dryness in there, and a consequence, a lot of crusting, a lot of bad, sort of like a chronic crusting infection, a lot of pus in the nose. I see that rarely, but I have seen them before, yeah. Okay. So if you have turbinectomies, then don't take away too much of the turbinate. Just take away enough to improve the airway.
Okay. Yeah. So if the only there's a need, as you said,
that's right.
You go through surgery.
Then the other, the common operation that people do is endoscopic sinus surgery. Okay, basically that what that does is that it opens up the entry points into the sinuses. As I referred to before, there are entry points into each of the sinuses, mm-hmm. and that allows air in and mucus to come out. So if it's too narrow, the mucus can't come out, then the germs that are trapped in there will then cause infection. So the purpose of surgery is to open it up. For example, a door that's too narrow, you cut into the walls. Okay, so the same thing. In the nose, you cut away bone to enlarge the entry points into your sinuses. That's what endoscopic sinus surgery is about. And then some people have introduced a balloon to try and expand the size of the doorway. That's called a balloon sinuplasty. It works as well, but once again, it's a cost because it can be about 5,000 ringgit for a disposable balloon.
Wow.
It really adds up the cost.
What do you mean by disposable?
You can only use it once. After that, you've got to throw it away.
And how long does it last?
For that one operation.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the disadvantage of balloon sinuplasty. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cause a lot of blood loss. You can do it as a daycare, but sure. You know, so that's convenient, but then it adds up 5,000 ringgit to what otherwise was a $15,000 operation. It now becomes a $20,000 operation.
Okay. Krish, yeah. You have a question?
Hi. Good afternoon, Meera.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Lim.
Yes.
This has nothing to do with sinuses, but it has been on my mind for a long time, and it's something called tonsil loss. I find that it's produced in the tonsils, right, and it gave off a very terrible smell, and I noticed a lot of people have it. I went to see an ENT surgeon, and I did not get a satisfactory answer, and I've been looking at it, Googling it online, and I couldn't find anything that was satisfactory. It comes, and then you have to remove it, and then it comes back again, and I don't know, maybe it is the certain acidic condition of our body that produces it. I have no idea at all.
Okay. Thank you, Krish. We'll ask Dr. Lim to address that problem.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I think what Krish is referring to is a tonsillith. It's basically a tonsil stone. Okay. Occasionally, when you open your mouth, you see a white spot in your tonsil. It's not pus. It's just accretions of mucus and food particles. Because your tonsil has little crypts in it. Crypts are like little holes in your tonsil. And sometimes, mucus is actually produced in the tonsil as well, and sometimes food particles can get trapped in there. And if it's big enough, it becomes like a little concretion, a little stone, basically. And some people say it causes a bad smell. I guess it can. I guess if it's got a lot of decaying food matter in there, it can cause a bad smell. But it's not everyone has it, but it's common enough. More patients come to see me because they think that they need to have surgery done. Mm-hmm. Probably usually doesn't, because you're able to suck it out. But of course, because that hole is still there, that little pocket is still there, so it can recur again, okay? So if it really bothers you, then okay, that's what you can have your tonsils removed, but please remember, if you have your tonsils removed, you're putting yourself at risk of pain for the next 3 weeks and chances of bleeding are also there. But I think what he's referring to is a common problem which a lot of people obsess about. Because you know, you can, when you open your mouth, you can actually see your tonsils.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what you can see, I guess you can focus on. You see, so people think that a lot of patients come to me with bad breath, saying that that's causing a bad breath. More often than not, it's actually not. I mean, bad breath is actually caused more by bad teeth, or sometimes by sinusitis. Very rarely by tonsil stones.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we have just one more call. Very quickly before we end, Shovan, you have a question.
Yes, doctor.
Go ahead.
I have an issue where I do not have a blocked nose, but the moment I lie down and go to bed, my nose gets completely blocked, and I start snoring, and my wife hates me for that. So you know, I was just wondering, I've used like nasal sprays and I've used like this strips and etc. Just nothing has given any help. And I've been to ENT and they haven't found anything wrong. So I was just wondering, like, is there anything I should be doing, like obedient to improve the situation?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Your nose, the inside of your nose, the so sausages I refer to, the turbinates, can swell up because of allergy. But it can also swell up because of the position in your body. If you were to hang upside down, then blood rushes to your head, right? So it's all gravity dependent as well. So when you lie down, I guess there's more blood flowing through your nose. And usually that doesn't cause a blocked nose, but it would cause a blocked nose if it's already swollen in the first place. So I think this gentleman probably has some degree of nose allergy to start off with, but maybe not to a degree that bothers him. But if he were to lie down, then I can more blood rushing to his nose, he probably would have feel as one side is blocked. He may have a deviated septum as well. Okay, what can you do about it? Well, it's causing him to snore, but snoring is not just due to a blocked nose. It has everything to do with laxity or the throat muscles, and that becomes more lax as you grow older. And also has to do with increasing body weight as well. I mean, you know, everyone knows that Malaysia is a very fat nation, so mm-hmm. it's got to do with BMI and body mass index. But what can you do? Well, first up, change the position that you sleep in. Sleep on your side, less on your back. If you want to, you can sleep with a few pillows to elevate your head, so there's less blood rushing to your head. Should try nasal sprays. Okay, whether it's decongestant sprays or steroid sprays in the first place, and try losing weight. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think snoring was his main problem.
Is weight.
Yes.
Okay. Must see a lot of more and more people coming through your doors.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
Because of weight?
No, only just because of that. Because I think more and more people seem to be getting, well, I guess a haze mm-hmm. can be blamed for causing more blocked nose, and more blocked nose, increased body weight also means more snoring.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so your message on rhinitis infection or rhinosinusitis, really?
Okay, I mean, if you can tolerate your symptoms, just by all means, just go ahead and do that. Not everything needs medications, and if your symptoms are still persistent and annoying, try medications. Surgery should be the last resort.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Lim Wai Kiat, consultant, ear, nose and throat specialist, revisiting rhinosinusitis on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.